Morning, everybody. It's Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Feels like the first time. That's a good song to start the show. It always feels like the first time when you walk into the Showcase studio. Still get butterflies in your stomach being here on Michigan Avenue on the legendary WGN radio. Sadly, it's not for too much longer that we'll be here in the Showcase studio as we continue to prepare for the move down the street. Tribune Tower was sold off, it's over a year ago, right, Raj?
Oh, easily.
Over a year ago to a group as Tribune Company itself went through its bankruptcy proceedings. They started selling off assets to make money back for creditors, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so the Tribune Tower is in private hands now, and it is well underway to being refurbished as condos. I think this building is going to be all condos. It's not going to be hotel here, right, Raj? I don't know if we know that for sure.
Well, they are going to build on the parking lot.
That's the plan, is on one side of the parking
might
lot.
Be
that would probably hotel. Be a hotel-condo mix,
right.
I believe.
And there'll be a lot of shops also on
the first
few floors,
two
I think.
Floors of everything here, from what I understand, will become retail.
Yeah. And so, because it's a historically preserved building, I think, they might keep the lobby as is.
I know that the last I read, I believe the alderman was trying to negotiate with the developers to keep the lobby open to the public because the lobby is beautiful. And it's got all these written sayings from chief justices and presidents and things throughout the lobby in the interior. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much of that they'd keep open, but maybe at least the lobby would be open to the public.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. But every weekend when I come in around 1 in the morning, downstairs in the back lot, and I walk up, there's guys on forklifts hauling stuff out to dumpsters. Must be making pretty good overtime. I'll give them that. But they're working 24/7 to tear down the inside of this building.
You walk through the cloud of dust.
I know. You know what it reminded me of?
What?
This was an odd thing, but as I was walking up today, it was a little 9/11-ish. It reminded me of 9/11.
All
the stuff floating in the air, the big haze, just made me think of the streets of New York after 9/11. Mm. It wasn't that thick, but it was kind of like that 15 minutes afterwards when there was still a lot floating in the air when you saw the footage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was
you're bringing back memories.
Yeah. No kidding. Long time ago memories.
And I'll tell you why you're bringing back memories, because I've told you about the video assignment that I gave my students that day. I told you about this a long time ago.
Go ahead, refresh me.
Well, my students came in that morning. I was working at Chicago Vocational, and when I pulled into the lot and clocked in the main office and started walking in, I had not heard anything. There wasn't anything on the radio, but in the 20 minutes or so it took me to walk up to my classroom, the first plane had hit. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know about it yet until I had an old TV set, and the only way I could get regular channels is by hooking up a paper clip in the back. Seriously.
I believe it.
And at that time, this was only a year into my program there, and we had no equipment. And I was going to show some videos on the VCR to my students about broadcasting and television and stuff. And I could catch the TV news. That's when I saw a network newscast that the first plane had hit. And while I'm watching it, the camera shot was at the other tower, and I saw the plane fly into it.
Oh, yes.
And I'm just, like, in shock myself. But that was, like, about 10 minutes before my students came to class for first period. And a bunch of them had seen the news about the first plane.
Well, the crazy thing was, for the longest time, I was watching because I had heard Spike and Tom Peterson talking about it. And for the longest time, they thought it was some little plane.
Right.
You know, like a little Cessna or something like that
had
flown into it. But you're watching the footage and you're seeing this ginormous gaping hole in the building.
Yeah.
And everybody's thinking, is that really a little plane that did that? But I think I was on the Today Show and not Good Morning America. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I started recording on my VCR. I have the tapes at home.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, from when I watched it that morning. I also have on mini disc every hour of the station from that day, from Spike and it first happening through probably Milt that night.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was something my students, the ones that knew about it, had come to class scared because Chicago Vocational is a humongous building. I don't know if you're aware of it. If you drive down the tollway.
I have driven down the Skyway, right?
Yeah, the Skyway, right.
I have driven past it on the Skyway. I've never been there, but I've driven past it many times.
It is a huge school, a huge building. And so the students were afraid that there were going to be other planes flying into big buildings.
Yeah.
And they thought it was going to fly into the school, that someone was going to attack the school. Well, several days later, in an effort to help them deal with that, there was a CD that came out of patriotic tunes sung by a whole bunch of, you know, singers around the country.
Oh, really?
And they were trying to raise money through the sale of this CD. So I got the CD, and I went online, and I found maybe 200 pictures of the event, of what happened. And I asked my students to pick a song and edit the video, edit the pictures with their song choice. And we had a very, very old, it took forever to do it. We had a very old editing system in the room, and you could only do one at a time.
Not funny, they could do it in 10 minutes on their phone back then.
Back then, it would take an hour, hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. I had double and triple period classes. So after a week or so, they finally finished, and we looked at them, and some of them were hauntingly moving.
I can imagine.
And a lot of those pictures were of people covered in inches of dirt and soot and wearing masks, and the street view, just nothing but a cloud of dust and dirt.
Yeah.
And it was, so when you said that, that's what hit me again. And it's one of the most moving moments I've had in teaching, and I know my students still remember it too. So
I would imagine most people remember what they went through immediately after that. There's no doubt about that. All right, so on the show tonight, as we mentioned to Patty earlier, we're going to talk after the 2:30 news about Stephen Hawking and his final paper and what he was saying, and maybe expand our minds a little bit. After 4 a.m., we're going to talk about that Chinese space station we've been talking about. It should be crashing in the next few days. Could end up right here in Illinois. I don't know if it's going to be more than a couple of scraps of plastic by the time it lands, but it's like a 9-ton thing, but that will mostly burn up. But there could be some pieces that hit the ground, could be right here in Illinois. So that's scary and exciting all at the same time. And of course, we're going to talk about Mexico a little bit. I got a text from my sister today asking me, oh, did you go to school with this, you know, sends me a name. Did you go to school with any of these people with this last name? I said, oh, yeah, there was a boy named this in my class. And she says, okay. And I'm thinking, oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
What am I thinking right away?
Well, you're thinking that that was his family.
I'm thinking somebody died.
Yeah.
I'm at the age now where when somebody says, hey, did you know so-and-so? I think, oh, no, they died. That really sucks, Roger.
I know.
I'm only 46, for goodness sakes. Why am I thinking people are dying already?
I know.
Jess is trying to make me feel better. She's like, you still look good, man. Earlier tonight, I said something. We were talking about something. Oh, we were walking through the tower. We went back to the lunchroom to get a snack. And we were looking at the pictures they have on the wall. And I was saying to Jess, like, most of my adult life has been kind of in and out of this building. I started working here in 97.
Yeah.
I had just gotten engaged. I worked here for 10 years. We had our kids. And I started Black Dog, went out on my own, but I've still, we did video work here for a while. I started hosting part-time here. So I've been around. I've been part of WGN for 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that's in this building. And I was saying, you know, to Jess, started here in 97, and she started to speak. I said, don't tell me that you were in kindergarten then. I don't want to hear about it. Don't worry, Matt. You still have a baby face. You know what? Don't start. But that sucks to get to the age where, you know, you roll out of bed every morning, everything is sore, and then somebody says, oh, do you know so-and-so? And I think, oh, my God, did they die?
Well, you know,
I imagine that only gets worse, you're going to tell me, too.
It does, because... Because
it becomes truer.
Well, we had our 40th high school reunion back in 2010. And
coming up on
is that
50th,
right? 2010. See, I'm so old now I can't count. But 2010, and everybody at that time was saying, you know, we better have one at 45 because we're not sure who will still be around for the 50th.
That's true.
And we had one for our 45th.
Now you got your 50th in 2 more years. You can do something for that.
Nobody has contacted me yet about trying to set something up. Unfortunately, on the last one, that's when I got sick, and I wasn't really able to do anything.
Yeah.
I had started something up, but was going through chemo at the time. So, yeah.
Two more years, I'll have my 30th high school reunion. God. When
catches
you're going through 50,
fast.
I'll be going through 30.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a fun start to the show, everybody. We covered 9/11 and how all of our friends are dying.
How's that Pop-Tart?
I'm saving that for happier moments around 4 a.m. 312-981-7200 is our number. You can call, you can text. We'd love to hear from you throughout the evening. We'll do some spots, we'll do some news, and then let's talk about Stephen Hawking and what he had to say before he kicked it last week. Mapu Bala with you, 720 WGN. The puck drops in the city that never sleeps, and Kane and the Hawks plan on keeping the Islanders up all night. Hawks Islanders tonight at 6 on WGN TV Sports. Before we forget, since Roger and I are talking about such maudlin crappy things, here's some good news. Eddie Olczyk announced that he is cancer-free,
that's
that he has
right.
beaten the cancer.
Yeah.
And that is the best news I've heard in a long time. And what great news on what was otherwise a depressing Blackhawks season. They'll miss the playoffs for the first time in 9 years.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to go to the news. After the news, we're going to chat with Michael Wall from Space.com, senior writer, about Stephen Hawking. Stephen Hawking's final paper, titled A Smooth Exit from Eternal Inflation? Question mark. Here's the abstract. You ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
This will either suck you in or make you say, you know what? It's time for bed. Here it is. The usual theory of inflation breaks down in eternal inflation. We derive a dual description of eternal inflation in terms of a deformed CFT located at the threshold of eternal inflation. The partition function gives the amplitude of different geometries of the threshold surface in the Hartle-Hawking state. Its local and global behavior in dual toy models shows that the amplitude is low for surfaces which are not nearly conformal to the round 3 sphere and essentially zero for surfaces with negative curvature. Based on this, we conjecture that the exit from eternal inflation does not produce an infinite fractal-like multiverse, but is finite and reasonably smooth.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Any idea what that means? I have no idea what that means. That reading that makes me feel like I'm back in like school and I'm about to take a test and I didn't pay attention at all and then I forgot to study. And now I sit down and like that's the first question. I'm like, oh, and I'm just like sweating.
Yeah.
Sweating a little bit reading that. However, there will be no quiz, but we'll try to see if our buddy here can try to explain what the hell does that mean? Because the headlines I've been reading is Hawking's final theory on multiverses, that there are multiple universes, mm-hmm. but also that there's not a good end for us.
Right.
Like that the world, that apparently this universe is going to come crashing down on itself or something. I'm sure billions and billions of years now.
Here's what I took out of it, and these are only the parts that I think I understood.
That they were trying to impress some girl?
No.
They totally had a girl in mind when they wrote that abstract.
Really? You think so?
If you say this at a dinner party, they're just going to love it. They're going to eat this up.
I heard him say three-dimensional, well, yep. three parts
yep.
of the sphere, and that in actuality, everything is just flat, one-dimensional.
So that, is this good for the flat earthers?
It very possibly could be. I think we need to continue to tune in after the news to find out.
Yes. Yes, Roger. Way to bring it home, buddy. And now to bring us back down, 708 writes, as you get older, the questions go from, do you know this person? To, did you know that person?
Yep.
Okay. 2:34 in the morning. Time for some headlines, Mr. Badish. The Matt Bubala Show, 720 WGN. We're live from the Allstate Showcase Studio here in the Tribune Tower on the Magnificent Mile in Chicago, in California. It's our friend Mike Wall. He's a senior writer at space.com. Mike, thanks so much for joining us on the phone this morning.
Not a problem.
Hey, so right before the news, I read on the air the abstract, the one little paragraph abstract from this paper. And that was the yeah. most English part of the paper that there is, because now I got into it and dude, my head hurts and by no means a science person at all, so I'm sure it's all a million miles over my head. Can you tell me in general, because the headlines I'm reading are, you know, Hawking's final paper, his final theory on multiverses, but also some of the headlines were like, and he predicts a bad end for life in this universe. So what are we going to learn once it all gets dissected and printed? What was Stephen Hawking's final theory on multiple universes?
Yeah, it is extremely math heavy. As you would expect, most of what Stephen Hawking did was very complicated and hard for all of us to sort of grasp. You know, you thought very, very big. That's led to a little confusion about what exactly that last paper is saying. And yeah, I mean, some of the news reports talked about how he predicted the end of the universe or something like that, and that's not really true. That like it doesn't have anything to do with that. That just kind of sprang from some physics jargon that's sort of in there. But like what it does do is it like sort of like tries to lay out, I mean, if there are parallel universes out there, which a lot of physicists think is actually true, you know, that like sci-fi trope, like you could go to a different, you know, to a parallel universe, and I mean, maybe meet like a parallel you and all that stuff. Like there are a lot of physicists out there who think that that's actually true. And what this paper does is it tries to imagine what those parallel universes might actually look like. And it sort of comes to a vague conclusion that they might look a lot like our own in terms of the kind of structure that they have with, like, you know, stars, galaxies, large scale structure like that. But that's about all that we can really say. There's no, like, this is what the universe is all about, and this is the nature of reality, and this is how we're all going to die, sort of stuff. Now, that's been overblown in the press a little bit.
Well, I would imagine, and I don't know, but tell me, is there something in there about how this universe eventually collapses upon itself, crashes with something else, something like that? Is that what people are taking out of it as the prediction of our demise?
No, that's not really addressed in this paper. That is a real ongoing topic of a lot of cosmologists, they're like looking into that. And there are a couple of different theories. There's like the big freeze, which is basically like the universe just keeps expanding forever, which it's doing now, and it doesn't show any signs of slowing down. In fact, it's actually speeding up. So everything's getting farther and farther away from everything else, like faster and faster. There are some people who have thought that at some point the kind of gravitational attraction of all of the stuff in the universe will eventually overcome that expansion and start sucking everything back in again, and that's called the Big Crunch, and so that would be like kind of like a reverse Big Bang at the very end, where everything just like comes back together and goes into like a single point. Most people don't think that that's what's going to happen. People tend to think that we're just going to accelerate like forever, and like eventually the stars will just burn out and everything will become dark and cold, and it's going to be that way forever. So that's a little depressing, but that's what people think is going to happen eventually.
That is a little depressing. Is that what eternal inflation means, the universe continually expanding?
Yeah, it's kind of. So physicists think that that at the very beginning of the universe, right after the Big Bang, like we underwent this thing called cosmic inflation, which is just this like unimaginably fast expansion of space and time, even faster than the speed of light, and that kept going on and on and on. And so that's the eternal part, is that in like some places it like never stopped, and in some places that like super fast expansion did stop. I mean, like the universe kept expanding, but not at such a fast rate. And sort of where it stopped or kind of calmed down a little bit, that's where we get universes. Like that's what happened here. But in some other places, it just keeps going on and on forever. And that super fast expansion, and that's what the eternal inflation kind of refers to, is that it just never stops in some places. And this kind of patchwork, that's what leads to this whole multiverse theory, that In some places, like this is going on and kind of popping off these infinite universes, and in some places it's just going on and there are no universes being created. And it leads to this sort of patchwork where it's like we're one universe and there are millions of others, billions of others. I mean, a lot of physicists think there are an infinite number of other universes. So it's crazy stuff. It like makes your head hurt just thinking about it. But this is real science, you know, this science fiction stuff. But people think that that's probably the nature of reality, basically.
So could we think of it sort of, you know, we've gotten these amazing Kepler photos over the years that show galaxy upon galaxy within our universe. Is that how we would maybe step back and think of our universe as just one of those galaxies, and maybe there's just billions and billions of them out there?
Yeah, you know, yeah, that's a good analogy. We could theoretically get to those other galaxies, you know, if we invent better spaceships and new propulsion systems, we actually could. But these other universes, it's really hard to imagine how we could actually get to them, because they're separated from us in some by other dimensions, or in some way that we can't cross that boundary. They're just kind of inaccessible to us. And what's really interesting about the other universes is that there's like no reason to think that like the physical laws that we know in our universe are the same in those other universes. Like the speed of light could be very different there. The sort of gravitational force could be different. The kind of forces that bind particles together could be different. They could be stronger. They could be weaker. They actually could be so weak that there's no way for little particles to come together and form atoms. So there might not be stars or like anything at all. It's just really weird to sort of think about it. There's all these possibilities and our universe is just one of those sets of possibilities.
Is there a reason to believe that other universes would be different? Is there some sort of scientific, or is that just sort of sci-fi fantasy that, well, maybe if there's different universes, there's different laws and there isn't gravity, or there's different, you know, why wouldn't, I guess I don't understand why, if there's multiple universes, why they wouldn't be created, why we wouldn't assume they were created in sort of the same way. Maybe there were multiple Big Bangs, or maybe from our Big Bang came actual multiple universes. Why do you think that it's a different dimension and not just there's another universe so far away that we can't see it and we probably can never get to it, but there were probably multiple, you know, why do we think different dimensions and possibly different laws of physics?
Yeah, the different dimensions thing or the sort of inaccessible other universes thing just sort of, that sort of stems from like how inflation works, I think, as in that patchwork, like kind of way we were talking about, in that like our little bubble, I mean, you could think about it as like a series of little bubbles, and we're in one of those, and that's our universe. And if you're in like a bathtub, say, and there's all these soap bubbles, like kind of floating around, mm-hmm. we're like one of those little bubbles. And if you're in one of those soap bubbles, if you're a microbe in one of those soap bubbles, say, you have no idea that there's another soap bubble like right next to you, or there's 1,000 just on the other side of your boundary. And so it's just the nature of the physics of inflation would sort of say that you can't get from one bubble to another. At least we don't know how we could. And as far as like what is the nature of those other universes, like are they the same as ours? That's a really interesting question. That's sort of what this like Hawking's last paper is trying to get at, is like what would those other universes be like? And I mean, nobody knows. I mean, this is all speculation based on complex math and physics, but nobody knows. And what this paper is basically saying is like sort of like what you're saying. I mean, on the broad strokes, there's reasons to think that some of these other universes would be kind of broadly similar to ours, you know, not like carbon copies, but kind of set up in the same basic ways and not like too weird or too totally bizarre. So, yeah, that's a really good question, and people are thinking about it hard. It's a very tough thing to tackle.
What's your guess, Mike? I mean, is any of it provable? Will we ever be able to truly figure out if they're different, if it's assumed that there's different dimensions, some things that we cannot physically maybe overcome with where we're at on Earth? Will the technology improve? Will be able to? Or is it thought that we will never know these answers truly?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And that's something that I've thought about kind of a lot. It might be that our brains are just not powerful enough to sort of like get at the true nature of what the universe is really like. You know, we're these hunter gatherers that evolved on the African savannah, and we evolved to sort of understand things that we can see and touch and on time scales that kind of approximate our own lifespans, right? And so if now we're trying really hard to understand what the entire universe is like, and that means trying to figure out what space time, what time actually is, when it began, what's happening on the subatomic level in the weird little world of quantum particles that can pop into existence and pop out of existence. Like, it's just, it makes no sense to our brains, just like things in the very large level make no sense to our brains, like how old the universe is and how far away things are. And the stuff might just be too hard for our brains to comprehend. But at the same time, you know, we're also making really big advances, you know, and artificial intelligence is really coming into its own, and we're actually getting, we're making some progress. And what physicists are trying to do and have been hoping to do for a long time is find that the so-called theory of everything, which basically a total understanding of all of physics on all levels, like the very big and the very small. So, black holes, general relativity, what is gravity, all that stuff, down to how does the subatomic world work. And people think that they might be onto something, you know, like you hear about string theory, and maybe, I mean, all of matter is just like little vibrating strings in the 11th dimension. That kind of crazy stuff that people are coming up with. I mean, maybe that's true. And maybe at some point we'll be able to tell if string theory is a theory of everything, and if it's actually how the universe is built, and we nailed it. But I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's a given that we can understand the universe. I mean, I think it's great that we're trying, and I hope that we do. But I don't know that it's something that we can ever figure out.
Yeah, it's it does hurt your head a little bit to start thinking about these things. So a caller, Joe, thank you for calling in. I'm just going to ask Mike your question. Caller says, you know, we've seen a lot this year about this, and I think there was some footage released, Navy pilots who've seen UFOs, things like that. Is there any reason for us to think that we have ever been visited in our lifetimes in the last 200 years or so by any form of life from anywhere else besides Earth?
I mean, you ask a bunch of different people that, you'll get a lot of different answers. My own personal opinion is, like, I don't think that there's any good evidence that we've been visited. I mean, I think that if we have, I would think we would know. It wouldn't be like a, well, kind of, sort of, like, what is this thing? I mean, it must be aliens. I mean, I don't think people who say they've seen something are stupid or anything or naive. I just think that this is, like, perhaps the biggest question of all time. And if we do discover alien life or that we've been visited, I would think that it would be a definitive thing and everybody agrees, and it's not some strange light in the sky or something that people can't explain. I mean, a lot of times what we can't explain, like, I mean, it has an explanation that's not aliens. We just don't quite know what it is yet. I mean, you know what right. I mean? There have been a lot of sightings, and none of them have really been, like, definitive. So, I don't know. I would tend to think if it's happened, then we would know about it. I don't buy into the whole government cover-up thing. I think somebody would have talked if the government had proof. It was just that knowledge is just too valuable. Somebody would have talked.
Well, and it doesn't seem, I mean, scientifically, does it seem to make sense that it would have happened in such a way? What we know now about how far away any life would have to be for it to exist that we would know of, you know, that could have possibly gotten here. The technology, the amazing technology they would have to actually get here would lead you to believe that they're not here just, you know, picking up dairy farmers in Iowa in the middle of the night and probing them and returning them, right? I mean, you would think that there'd be a little bit more with how advanced and incredibly sophisticated they would be, that they would need to come do things like that.
Yeah, well, that's something else that doesn't really make a lot of sense. I mean, if you're from another star system and you make it here, that's a really good point. You're very advanced. You're way more advanced than we are because you can cross, like, interstellar distances, which we cannot do, at least not on a human lifetime. So you know what you're doing. And if you come here, then, like, you're either going to be so stealthy that, like, nobody's going to see you, right? If you want to stay in stealth mode, then you're going to be in stealth mode, and, like, we're not going to see you because you're way more technologically advanced than we are. And if you want to make yourself known, then you'll do that in a way that makes sense and not just like zip around to be seen by five people or like two fighter pilots and be gone. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
With all the technology we have now in the skies, would something be able to visit us without being spotted? Are there still things that could easily slip through? We don't. Am I overestimating how many eyes in the sky we have these days that something could still sneak in, sneak out without being seen?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of ideas about how we could be being spied on. There are some people that there's a lot of sci-fi stuff that's really interesting, and some of that's percolated into sort of like real, like scientific like kind of thoughts. I mean, one of them is like, I mean, what if there were aliens out there and they wanted to keep tabs on our civilization, they could put a space telescope in the asteroid belt.
Yeah.
And there's no way we would ever see. I mean, we've only found like millions and millions of asteroids out there, and most of them we have never discovered. So who's to say we could find like some asteroid sized spaceship with a telescope on it that's looking at us. I mean, I don't think that it's out there, but that's not something we'd be able to actually detect with current technology.
Well, theoretically, at least, they would then be sending some sort of radio waves or some sort of signals that maybe we would pick up, right? Some sort of noise.
Yeah, I mean, probably. And that's really interesting. I mean, I don't know if you remember, like, last October, there was all that, there's all that hubbub about that, like, interstellar asteroid. Did you hear about that? The, like, first known interstellar object to go through our solar system.
And, okay.
That's, like, probably happened before, but this is the first one that we actually have spotted. And people thought that like maybe that could have been an interstellar spacecraft or something, because it's really interesting actually. I mean, you should look it up. It's called Oumuamua, which is a Hawaiian word meaning scout, and it's probably about 800 feet long and it's really skinny. It's like shaped like a needle, so it's really weirdly shaped, and the fact that it came from interstellar space has gotten some people really excited about maybe it's a spacecraft and come to observe us or something. And scientists did sort of train their big radio telescopes on it and see if they could detect any kind of radio waves, any emissions. I mean, just like you're talking about. But no, there's been nothing, and it's probably just a weirdly shaped like asteroid that was booted out of another star system by gravitational interaction with a planet like a long time ago. So, yeah, people think about that, and people are actively looking for it. But so far, we haven't seen anything that would make us think. We've been visited.
We're speaking with Michael Wall, senior writer at space.com. Can you hold on just a minute? We have to take a quick break for the news, but I want to ask you a couple quick Stephen Hawking questions, get back to the paper and a couple of his final theories. Can you hold on just a couple minutes?
Yeah, sure.
All right, excellent. Mike Wall from space.com. Let's take a quick break, and the news is next, 720 WGN. Quick break for the news, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Mike Wall, space.com senior writer. I want to ask him, so the title is A Smooth Exit from Eternal Inflation. What does that exit mean, and how smooth would it actually be? And as long as Joe brought up aliens, there were stories just in the last year or two that Stephen Hawking said we should not be trying to contact other life. We'll see what Mike knows about that. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. If you have a smart speaker, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn 301. Let's get the news, Mr. Battish. Thank you, Roger Battish. Matt Bubala with you here, 3:09 in the morning on 720 WGN. Expanding our consciousness a little bit, talking with Michael Wall, space.com senior writer. He's on the phone with us for a couple more minutes. Michael, thank you so much for holding on. You heard there at the end of the news, Roger made a comment about the poles flipping. We did an interview a couple weeks ago with the author of a book about our poles flipping, that the poles flip every few thousand years, and it can wreak all sorts of havoc on Earth. Have you ever read or learned about poles flipping?
Yeah. I mean, I know a little bit about it. I'm not an expert on it, but yeah, it's just one of those things that does happen from time to time. But this is going to be the first time it's happened when we're a really technology dependent civilization where it can make a difference in our lives, pretty much. Yeah.
A lot going on out there. Okay, so during the news, I was trying to read a little more of this paper, and literally, I mean, it's unless you know science, like when you're reading this, Michael, somebody who writes about science, do you read this paper and say, okay, I have at least a loose grasp of what they're talking about here? Or even for you, are you looking at this like it's all written in a language you've never encountered?
No, I mean, I don't have the chops to know any of the math. But that math is like, I mean, yeah, theoretical physics stuff is above what I'm capable of understanding. So I can like kind of understand concepts of where they're going with it, but mm-hmm. I'm not qualified to judge what the math is saying. That's why I have to call up like folks who do know the math. I mean, call up other theoretical physicists and cosmologists, and they can sort of explain what it all means. And that's why it's so hard to get a read on what the kind of import of this paper is, and most theoretical physics papers for that matter. It's just such a specialized world, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not something that anybody can just pick up and be like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, like anybody who is reading a book over their head and doesn't know what's going on, let's jump to the ending. So the title is called A Smooth Exit from Eternal Inflation. Eternal Inflation, the theory that the universe keeps expanding. What does the smooth exit part mean?
Well, I'm not entirely sure about that. I think that might be like a little jargony thing. Or it might refer to like kind of like going away from the eternal inflation theory, or it might be like what happens when in the patches where eternal inflation like is not happening. Cause like, like we were talking about earlier, there are some patches of the multiverse or the very early universe where this inflation was happening, these like little bubbles popping up everywhere. And in some of those, you know, like the inflation just goes on like eternally, and in some others it doesn't. So like maybe that smooth exit means those patches where it doesn't go on forever, and it actually produces universes like our own that are things that we can make sense out of. That's a couple of guesses on my end. I'm not entirely sure.
I read headlines in the last year or two that Stephen Hawking said we should not be trying to contact other life, that could be bad for us. What were his theories on that?
Yeah, he was one of the most vocal proponents of the we should be careful kind of ethos when it comes to alien life. This is interesting. There's actually a real debate going on in the kind of astrobiology community. That there are groups of scientists, you know, who have the big radio telescopes and are listening for signals from other stars that could be from aliens. And there's a subset of those people who think we should be sending out messages that are telling aliens basically we are here, we're smart, this is what we're capable of, you should know that we're here and try to contact us and like maybe give us like some of your secrets for your super fast spaceships and for eternal life and all this stuff that like people think super advanced aliens might know.
Mm-hmm.
There's another group Stephen Hawking was the most famous of these people who are like, well, wait a minute, like we don't know anything about these aliens if they exist. And if they're way more technically advanced than we are, which they would almost certainly be, because we've only been able to send signals out into space for like 100 years. You know, we only invented the like TV like 100 years ago. So like, I mean, if you live in a universe that's almost 14 billion years old, chances are if there's another advanced civilization out there that's capable of sending signals, they've been around a lot longer than like we have, and they're much more advanced and capable than we are. So Stephen Hawking's basic thought was like, let's just hold on. Let's not like advertise our presence, because what if these creatures just want to come and like destroy us or enslave us or just take all the resources off our planet and grind us into the dirt? Like, we have no idea like what they want. So why do we assume that they wouldn't do that?
Let's
just be super careful.
Is there a reason to believe that, you know, is there solid reasoning on, hey, they might want to do this? Because I would think, well, if they're that advanced that they can contact us, then they've figured out so much of this stuff. Like, they wouldn't need to come here to get our oil or our water, because there's got to be hundreds and thousands of planets that have water and things like that. I mean, I guess there's a possibility that they need that type of stuff, but you would think there'd be other planets they could find with that.
That's exactly what the people who aren't as concerned would say. That's the exact argument that like a lot of people make for like, well, like that's sort of inflating our own importance. Like we're learning now that 25% of all stars at the minimum seem to have like a potentially Earth-like planet that could support life, and so our planet would be no real draw to aliens because they could get water anywhere, they could get rock anywhere, they could get metal anywhere, and also, I mean, if they're really advanced, there's another argument that say that basically says, you know, they've probably already kind of gone like digital. They've probably gone beyond the need for a physical body and have kind of uploaded themselves into like electronic form, which is sort of where we're headed if you believe all this AI stuff and like singularity and all that stuff. And if that's the case, then they don't really need resources like at all, except like energy and like raw material to repair themselves. Then they wouldn't need to come here and, I don't know, kill our cows or log our trees or dig up our oil or anything. You know, I tend to be more sympathetic to that viewpoint that that they wouldn't really need us or want to bother with us in any kind of negative way. But yeah, like the Stephen Hawking of the world would say, but like you don't know that. So yeah. Like if you send out a message, you're assuming everything's fine, and even if there's like a 0.1% chance that you're wrong, they would still say that like risk is too high because you could bring the destruction of the entire planet or the extinction of humanity down just with one signal that you send out. So
is there really a way for us to even send a signal? I mean, we've been sending out radio waves and television waves for, like you said, about 100 years. That's traveling, you know, however far through space. Are there quicker ways for us to send messages?
No, that's the fastest they can go. No, yeah, those are going out into space at like light speed. So they've gone like 100 light years, like in that time. But there are people, that's sort of weak. It's like this, it's basically like, I mean, leakage is what astronomers say, and it just sort of like sifts out into space and kind of peters out. It's like not a super strong signal. So if you want to actually get in touch with somebody and give them information about yourself that's more than just like an old I Love Lucy kind of episode, then you would want to actually beam something with a powerful transmitter straight to a star and like one kind of direct beam that would give them a lot of information. And there's a lot of people talking about what that information should be, you know, like what should we tell them? Should we give them all of our math and physics knowledge and show them how smart we are? Should we encode like our DNA in there to tell them about our biology? And the Stephen Hawking's of the world would be like, no way.
Yeah, well, I could see where you have some, like, let's not give them everything. Let's say, hey, we're here. We'd love to have you over for dinner, but let's not give them the code to our genes.
there are people who actually want to do that. Other people say that that we should just upload all of Wikipedia just so that they can figure out enough about us just by sifting through all that. There's like enough like information in there. They could figure out language from that by putting all those bits together. And yeah, it's a topic of a lot of debate and a lot of discussion and people. It's unclear where exactly it's going to fall. But what's interesting about that whole thing, there are people who have already beamed out messages already just kind of on their own. There's like no universal authority for saying you can or cannot send out a message on behalf of planet Earth. So there have been people who have used these big radio telescopes. Like some scientists over the years have just been like, oh, I'm going to beam out a message.
And yeah,
there have been a handful of groups who have already done that.
Well, if we beamed a message to the nearest star that had possible habitable planets, how far away is that star? Is it Alpha Centauri or
exciting? Yeah, actually, and Proxima Centauri is the closest star to Earth at about 4.2 light years away, and it's part of the Alpha Centauri system, and it has a roughly Earth-sized planet that might be able to support life. So it's possible that the closest star system to Earth is actually has life on it. It probably wouldn't be technological life, or theoretically we should have like maybe seen signs of it already, or gotten the signal from them, but that might be an unwarranted assumption too, because maybe they're lying low. It would probably be like some kind of microbial life if it exists. It's possible. It's a potentially habitable planet.
Okay. when you mentioned upload ourselves, I had never heard this before, that I know there's a lot of AI technology and stuff, but to think that another civilization somewhere else doesn't even need like the human form anymore, or whatever form they have, that they could be more just, I guess, a source of energy or consciousness. Is that really a theory out there, that that's where we're headed?
Yeah. And not that they would just sort of go out into spaces like this, sort of like vapor cloud of consciousness or something, but that there would be computers, basically, that they would be like machine life, and in like kind of a sci-fi way. I mean, more than just like a cyborg, not just that you implant some kind of digital component into your brain or something. That's probably a step along the way. But there are people who think that, yeah, like actually going fully digital and actually like kind of merging fully with machines and becoming a machine is our ultimate future. And it's like one of those things that, like, if you extrapolate far enough into the future, it doesn't seem that weird. Like, if you think about how far we've come in the last 100 years,
yeah.
I mean, we're like, we've got self-driving cars. Just, I'm barely 100 years after we first like invented the airplane. We've got like cell phones now that are way, way more powerful than anything that helped put man on the moon, you know, as like far as computers go, and that's advancing exponentially, all that technology. So if you extrapolate like 10,000 years into the future, if we're still around and haven't destroyed ourselves by then,
right?
That's a really long time for exponential technology to advance. Like,
yeah,
you can do a lot of crazy stuff in 10,000 years if it keeps going exponentially, you know, and that's what a lot of people think.
That's for sure. Although it's interesting, you bring up two things. You talk about, like, look at where we are with cell phones today, but people would also say, boy, it's destroying our culture, the kids these days, and all of us are so addicted to those things. And then you talk about self-driving cars, where the big story this week was the Uber self-driving car that hit a pedestrian and killed him.
Yep.
So maybe not everything headed in the best direction with all that stuff. We need to slow down a little.
Yeah, and if you want to talk AI, then you can always talk about Skynet and the Terminator and say that.
Yes, we could. John Connors might come, you know, throw a big wrench in everything. All right, so here's my last big question of the night. Will we ever figure out the Big Bang? Will we ever know how that happened? Because to me, that's the ultimate question, is where science and religion can come together, because everybody who's religious, I think you can believe in science and say, well, God, you know, made the Big Bang happen and everything else happened from there. And so you can still have religion and science. But the question becomes, you know, what was before the Big Bang and what caused the Big Bang to happen? That's, I imagine, the ultimate stumbling block and the place where, you know, we'd have to really get to figure things out. Do you think we ever get there?
It's one of those things that's going to be hard for our brains to understand, even if we do get there, I think, because there's nothing that happened before the Big Bang, really, because time didn't exist before the Big Bang. Because at the very beginning of the universe, like, everything was compacted into a little point of that was infinitely dense, basically. It's kind of like what it's like inside a black hole, which is just like something where the laws of physics like really break down. Stephen Hawking, basically, that was one of his contributions, was figuring out that that's probably what it looked like at the Big Bang, or just before the Big Bang. Like, everything was a singularity, which is like infinite density and space time that was curved infinitely on itself, such that like time basically didn't exist. So there really was no, like, before the Big Bang, because time didn't exist, which is really hard to understand, right? And, like, I mean, you could say that, like, the laws of the universe, or the laws of the multiverse, whatever you want to call it, would dictate that the Big Bang happened and something came from nothing. And that might be all that you can say, or all that you can understand. And, I mean, we already know that things come out of nothing, because, I mean, quantum, down the quantum, like, kind of level, these particles do pop into existence and pop out of existence from nothing. And so we already know that that happens. So,
really? I did not know that. I've never heard that before. Things actually come out of nothing. Is it truly out of nothing, or is it out of something we don't understand or see?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, it could be coming from another dimension or something, but our best understanding of the quantum world is that and virtual particles, basically, that's what this is called. And they do come from nowhere. I mean, they come from like the quantum vacuum, basically. They come from nowhere, and quantum stuff is so weird. I mean, like a subatomic particle can be in two places at the same time. It just doesn't make any sense to us. So it's possible that our brains, like we were saying before, it's possible our brains are just not built to understand that sort of stuff.
Stars are still being born within our universe all the time, right?
Yes.
So stars are being born, stars are dying out, black holes are sucking things up. Is it possible that our Big Bang was just basically like a star being born within our universe, that there's, you know, billions and billions of universes and there's Big Bangs all the time creating new universes?
That's possible. And it's also possible that our universe is not real at all, that it's a simulation that is being run by a super advanced alien civilization for fun or for their own edification.
Did we just enter the Matrix on that one? Is that basically that theory that this doesn't truly exist in the form we see it?
Yeah, and that is a real viable theory that people talk about. I mean, physicists who think about cosmology stuff, they come up with some really crazy ideas, but they actually model them and come up with the possible or how this could happen or why it's likely to happen. And that's, there are some people who like really do think that the chances are good that like we're living in a simulation.
There's got to be a lot of pot smoking in your circles, right? I mean, I mean that in all seriousness, because I'm sitting here doing this, I'm thinking I really would like to be, I haven't been high since college, but I really feel like I need to smoke something and sit here and do this, turn all the lights out and just get high to sit here and do this, because it's all sorts of, I mean, there's infinite possibilities, but it just is like crazy talk when you're sober.
Yeah, no, maybe it would help. And maybe it has helped some of these folks make a logical leap that they wouldn't have otherwise seen. I don't know.
Mike Wall is a senior writer at space.com. It's been fascinating. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us and staying up so long with us. I hope we talk to you again soon, Mike.
Yeah, happy to do it. It was a really fun conversation. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man. Yeah, we'll talk again soon. We appreciate it. Mike Wall, check him out at space.com. All right, let's clear the cobwebs and let's move along. We're going to talk about Mexico. Are you afraid of Mexico? I have friends who are deathly afraid right now to go back to Mexico. We've been many times, but we're hearing all these stories about what's going on over there. So let's talk to you about that. We'd like to hear from you as well. 312-981-7200. We'll do that after the news, which is next on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you. 720 WGN at 5 a.m. The morning show with Orion and Max comes along. I'm sorry for all of you living in those southern counties where Roger is saying you're going to get hit by a big snowstorm. I'm in Kane, and I haven't heard you mention Kane at all. Am I luckily going to miss most of this?
Well, that's all that we have right now. I don't know if you've had a chance to take a look at the WGN-TV interactive weather radar.
I refuse to look at radar. I refuse to look at
Why?
Weather. I'm not going to look at weather.com because I'm tired of it, Roger.
It's only a storm. It'll be sunny tomorrow.
It is March 24th.
Tomorrow.
March 20th. And I know we get snow in March, but come on already.
We get snow in April.
Tired of it.
Come on.
I don't even think we had that bad of a winter.
We have not. And that's the thing. We've had worse.
There's always worse. I don't like, it's been worse. Of course it's been worse. There were plagues. Everything's been worse. I'm talking about right now.
Right now, Freeport, if we start up north, northern part of the state, Galena, Freeport, Oregon, Dixon, Mendota, Peru, Streeter, I'm heading south.
Texter from 847, Eastern Iowa roads are a disaster.
Yeah. This stretches all the way from Canada. The snow comes straight down from Canada through, through Minnesota. And North Dakota, South Dakota, and Iowa. Then it turns towards Chicago in Iowa, but then half of it is rain. The southern portion of this front is rain. So that is down right now through Missouri, Jefferson City, Springfield, Illinois has rain. St. Louis has rain. Carbondale has rain. Evansville has rain, but there is snow heading down towards, it is just west of Indianapolis. And then it stretches all the way down to Chattanooga with the rain. So it's a mess of a front that's coming through, and your luck on snow or rain or slush or a mess depends on what side of the front you're on.
It sounds awful. It sounds annoying.
It is, Roger. You know, you need more. You need a. You know what you need? Pizza.
Oh, you knew he'd work it in there somewhere.
Yeah, I got to.
I'm having Pop-Tarts right now, and it's already 3:39. It's probably too late to order.
Oh, you said they close at 3, right?
I might be 4. I'm not sure. Just says 4. Is it 4, Jess? It's 4.
Ooh,
just like, nope,
20
still
minutes.
Time.
What kind of Pop-Tarts you got?
They just sell the strawberry, frosted strawberry.
See, now, cinnamon brown sugar
are so good.
Go-to.
Cinnamon brown sugar are so good.
I lived on those my junior year in college.
They had them back then?
Yes.
I thought it was like in the recent wave of, you know, how every brand of everything now has 18,000 different flavors.
Had them back. And
all right, those are good.
Yeah.
Those are good. Okay. Let's do this. You've never been to Mexico, right, Roger? I think we've talked about this.
No, I have not. No.
Farthest, Jess, you haven't been there either?
I've been to Texas.
All right, let's call Bertrand. We got to do a Bertrand travel middle of the night show.
That's right.
To Mexico.
Yeah.
We should do
that. Wait, an overnight? Just one night?
Well, the show's on overnight.
Oh, I see. To do the show down there.
We could do that.
We could do a whole week down there.
People are, if you're doing the show from 2 to 5 a.m. from Mexico, you get an interesting clientele, is my guess, at the all-inclusive resort.
Roe did his show from down there.
Not at 2 in the morning, he didn't.
No, that's true.
I mean, Violetta and Kevin probably could have pulled that off. I don't think him and Anna would have.
No.
So there have been a lot of stories in the last year. We've talked about this a little bit, and we've been looking for the right guest. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel did a big expose on problems at the resorts in Mexico. I'm going to paraphrase a bunch of it here instead of reading through the old stories. But basically, people from Wisconsin going down to these all-inclusive resorts, and I've been at several of them, and for the most part, I'm sure there's cheap ones, but they're really nice, really, really nice. And there were stories of people blacking out and not knowing how they got back to their room. Some of them involve allegations of assault.
Mm.
Some of them are more about what happened. Were we slipped something? Was the alcohol tainted? Then there were questions about how these resorts handle these cases, because people want to talk to the police. The resorts don't want to call the police. People want to go to the hospital. Resorts don't want to call an ambulance. People are getting in cabs to go to the hospital. And then the hospital's demanding thousands of dollars in cash up front.
Ooh.
So the stories as I was reading them did not have a linear, here's what's exactly happening. It was kind of this, something's happening, we don't know what, so be careful. Is the alcohol being spiked?
Mm-hmm.
Is the alcohol tainted? And I'm thinking, oh, the alcohol's not tainted at these resorts. These are nice resorts. But then there was a study in parts of the reports that a rather large amount of alcohol in Mexico is believed to be... not unregulated, because it is regulated, but being produced in unlicensed factories. Uh-huh. So resorts might either be knowingly or unknowingly buying alcohol made with crap that's not supposed to be in there,
right,
to cheapen it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they're buying paint thinner, and then people are blacking out. So we don't know exactly what's going on. And then, you know, the Trump administration is issuing travel warnings. So then I'm thinking, well, this is when Mexico is saying we ain't paying for that wall. So we had that going on. So then I'm thinking, well, this is part of that. But these stories keep happening. And then in, was it January or February? And I had only heard about this last week. So I go to Playa del Carmen area.
Okay.
We land in Cancun. We go south half an hour and a half. Couple hours down is Tulum, but between Cancun and Tulum is Playa del Carmen and that area, the whole Riviera Maya, it's considered. And there's all sorts of resorts. And we actually belong to a vacation club now.
Oh, all right.
Which has been a killer for the last year, 2 years, so we've been paying for that. but and Colleen's regretted it every day since we've done it. But you know, we had gone a bunch of times and wanted to keep going, and here's the deal, and blah blah blah, and they suckered us in. And so we love it. We love, love, love going down there. Uh-huh. And love the resorts. But there's an island called Cozumel off of Cancun. We haven't gone there as of yet. But there's a ferry that goes from Playa del Carmen to Cozumel. Mm-hmm. There was an explosion.
There were a couple of them.
Well, there was one.
Right.
And then they stopped one before it happened. They found explosives on another ferry. So there's warnings about that, and people are like, what the hell is going on here? Because you always hear, you know, my mom used to get very nervous when we went because of the drug cartels and the killings and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was always like, listen, all you have to do is not get involved in the wrong things.
Right.
We're going to an all-inclusive resort, we stay in the resort, or we go to ruins, we do things during the day. We're not going out looking for drugs in the middle of the night.
Right.
We're likely not to have any problems. But now there's all these other things going on, and it's got people very concerned. Now, the story that's out tonight, or earlier today, out of Iowa, is an Iowa couple and their two young children were found dead in a rented condominium near Tulum. Creston Police, this is Creston, Iowa, said they contacted the U.S. Department of State after the family was worried, the family back home was worried they hadn't heard from them. They heard from them when they got down there. They were supposed to be back to go to a basketball game for a college, and they didn't come back. And so then they contacted the police, contacted the State Department. They were in a condo in Akumol near Tulum, which is a beautiful area. And police went to the condo that they had rented and found the family dead inside there. Mm. Police are saying there were no signs of foul play. There were no obvious signs of foul play when they found them. An autopsy is underway in Playa del Carmen at the state's forensic medicine facility. There was no blood, no bullet holes, no mess in the room when police found the family. Family members were identified as 41-year-old Kevin Sharp, his wife 38-year-old Amy Sharp, their children 12-year-old Sterling and 7-year-old Adriana. So terribly sad, terrible, terrible story that will lead to more questions of what the hell is going on in Mexico. Now, I don't know if this could be carbon monoxide poisoning, if there's no obvious signs of foul play.
Right.
Maybe something like that. They died in their sleep because it was
a rented
bad carbon monoxide.
Yeah, it could have been. Maybe they turned the gas on and it didn't light or something. Maybe there was a leak. But if they say no foul play...
No now, obvious signs of foul play.
Yeah.
They could have been poisoned. I mean, but, you know, that seems unlikely, right?
Yeah.
The board, what board is this? Mexico Tourism Board said in a statement that it is aware of the ongoing investigation and, quote, we'd like to express our sympathies to all family and friends of the Sharp family. The entire Mexico tourism industry offers its support and commitment to finding out what happened. The board said it wants to remind travelers who go to Quintana Roo, which includes Cancun, Playa del Carmen, Cozumel, and Riviera Maya, that it is, quote, a safe place to visit and there are no increased levels of threat observed at this time. But you keep hearing of all this other stuff. And you worry and you wonder. And I wonder if any of our listeners have been or are headed to or have stopped going to Mexico because of this. 312-981-7200. I am not afraid to go there. I'm trying to plan a trip for the fall or next winter or whenever we possibly can go again with friends. But my buddy who I work with at Black Dog, who we've gone with him and his wife a couple times before, he's like, there's no way in hell I'm going. And he keeps sending me these stories whenever they come out. Now, he's a crabby old man who doesn't like to travel, but he's using this as a, there's no way we're going again.
Mm.
And I wonder how people feel about that.
Yeah, how many go to Mexico and have not had any problems? Like you say you haven't.
Thousands and thousands.
Yeah, you say you haven't.
But maybe...
But is this legitimately an increase in problems? I mean... Or is it just one or two incidents separated out from all of the non-eventful visits? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it does. On March 9th, the travel ban for U.S. employees, this is from the U.S. Embassy, was amended to only certain neighborhoods within Quintana Roo. Some different neighborhoods of Playa del Carmen. State Department website noted that U.S. citizens should avoid those neighborhoods until further notice as well, and that the U.S. government personnel are authorized to travel to resort areas in Riviera Maya, including those near Playa del Carmen that are outside the restricted neighborhoods of this alert. U.S. government personnel are still prohibited from, and U.S. citizens caution against, using ferry services between Playa and Cozumel until further notice. Travel to other parts of Quintana Roo, including tourist areas such as Cancun, Cozumel, Tulum, and the Riviera Maya, is allowed. The State Department travel warning for non-government American citizens did not change. U.S. citizens are warned not to travel to five Mexican states, including Colima, Guerrero, I apologize for the pronunciations, Michoacan, Sinaloa, and Tamaulipas. Anyone traveling outside the U.S. is encouraged to enroll in the Smart Travel Enrollment Program, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Last summer, the State Department urged U.S. visitors to Mexico to exhibit caution when consuming alcohol. The warning came after the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported on the death of a 20-year-old U.S. citizen, Abby Connor, who was found unresponsive in the pool of a resort near Playa del Carmen. The young woman was eventually transported to the U.S. where she died. Connor and her brother were both found unresponsive in the resort pool after drinking at the resort bar while on a trip with their family. After the Journal Sentinel shared Abby's story, more than three dozen people came forward to report similar cases of unexplained blackouts at all-inclusive resorts in Mexico. Some reported having had just a drink or two before blacking out. The State Department decided a formal warning was necessary. It read, there have been allegations that consumption of tainted or substandard alcohol has resulted in illness or blacking out. If you choose to drink alcohol, it is important to do so in moderation and to stop and seek immediate medical attention if you begin to feel ill. And that's when there were other stories of the alcohol being tainted and there being, you know, possible widespread issues in Mexico with the alcohol. Helen is in Joliet and on 720 WGN. Good morning, Helen.
Hi. I have two adult sons that always went to Mexico. I mean, always were down there. They said they're done. Never again will they go down there.
Why is that?
Because, well, the one couple was on TV and the wife said, I always felt safe here with my husband, 6'4". Said we found ourselves back in the room. Said, I know it's assaulted, and no one would do anything. That other couple where the daughter died in the swimming pool, and they pulled the son out, said, no, they won't risk their family or themselves down there again. Said, we don't care what anybody else does. We're going to Vegas and the Florida or Hawaii. They won't get another penny out of us or take a chance on our life down there.
Those are people that have gone a bunch of times and loved it every time, never had an issue, but these stories are coming out and that's making them think twice.
Yeah, they're quite wealthy, so they can afford to go. But no, we're not risking our kids or our wives. We're not going.
Yeah. All right, Helen, thank you so much for jumping on. 312-981-7200. If you have a call or a comment, give it to us right now, 720 WGN. We'll get to news in a couple of minutes, and then we're going to talk about that space station from China that's going to crash, possibly over the Midwest. At least in some parts, there'll be a nice blanket of snow, so you'll have nice markings of where it hits the ground and burns up the atmosphere.
I'm going to paint a X on the roof of your house.
Oh, we should do that. I'll buy free tacos to anybody if it hits where?
You know, we did it in the parking lot of one of the casinos when I worked in Vegas when Skylab was falling.
Tell you what I'm going to do. During the news, Jess and I are going to pull up a map. We're going to throw a finger, close our eyes, throw a finger, and I'll pick a town in Illinois. And if it hits that town, I'll buy a taco for everybody who's listening right now.
How are you going to know who's listening? You're so bad.
309 says, in Bloomington, normal, we have about 2 inches of wet, heavy snow and some sleet and freezing rain.
Yeah.
We were talking about pizza, and then a texter from 708 sent us a picture of the pizza he had just pulled out of the oven.
Oh, how dare they.
Terrible.
Evil, evil, wicked people.
847 says, why do people who go to foreign countries expect all of the regulations and law enforcement benefits of the United States? He guesses that some type of unregulated bug killer could be involved. You know, using some crazy pesticide they breathe in. I would hope that you're not using a pesticide strong enough to kill people, because I feel bad for the worker who's out there spreading that around. But I understand what he's saying, that, you know, we don't know. We don't have the same type of regulations in other countries that you're going to have here. So something could have gone. My guess is going to be carbon monoxide, though. I'm going to think there was some sort of leak, gas leak, like you said, something like that. But it's sad either way. No matter what it is sad. Okay, quick break news. And then space station crashing to Earth this weekend. After the news, next. Morning, everybody. 4:06 in the morning. We're in the final hour of the Matt Bubala Show for this week. We've got Orion and Max with the morning show coming up at 5 a.m. Roger, I got to meet a loyal listener this weekend.
Ooh.
Somebody, or actually during the week, this week, we had a Black Dog video shoot, and we hired a makeup artist.
Oh, nice.
Trying to make everybody look good. And the makeup artist was Meg from Meg Does Makeup. Meg, huge GN listener. She knew who I was. She listens to the show.
Marvelous.
She said she grew up listening to the Cubs games. When she was in college, wanted to listen to the Cubs games. Always had GN on. Fell in love with GN. Always has GN on.
Marvelous.
Knows all of us. Loves the show. So it was wonderful to meet her.
It's always great to meet the people who listen to
it. It is very nice.
It's kind of weird because, I mean, I'm a big fan. I listen a lot. And so when I hear someone else listens, I don't know how to take it. It's like, well, all right, now we're all together in the same group of listeners, but yet I work here too.
Yeah.
It's weird when someone comes up. Now I can understand in my official capacity as the MC of the Skokie 4th of July parade, people say, oh, hey, Roger, WGN. That I know, but that's an official thing, you know? But when it's just you're just like in a store or something and someone says, hey, I know your voice. And then I'm kind of like, oh, geez, sheepish. And,
Well, it was really cool to meet Meg. MegDoesMakeup.com is her website. She's a wonderful makeup artist.
Awesome.
So if you have any reason, like you're doing headshots or your company's doing a video or whatever, if you ever need a makeup person, MegDoesMakeup.com. That's Meg with two G's, MegDoesMakeup.com. She's wonderful.
Nice.
And Meg, she also bartends, so that's why she listens to us, because she also bartends a little bit.
Okay.
So then she'll be driving home, and she'll have us on.
Yeah.
Could be headed home right
driving.
Now. Please be careful if you're driving, Meg. Okay. And during the news, we said before the news that we will pick a town in Illinois, and if Chinese space station crashes in that town, I will have to buy free tacos. Taco Bell isn't throwing out the Mir space station. If it lands here, we buy the world free tacos. So we're just going to have to do it ourselves. So I put up the maps on my computer, and I like spun it around a million times.
Keep
and
your
I
eyes
just,
closed?
I had my eyes open because I had to spin it, and Jess closed her eyes and pointed with her finger.
Oh, okay.
And she landed on Arlington Heights.
Okay.
If the probe crashes.
You're going to go broke. Arlington Heights.
I'm not. Doesn't mean I'm buying it for all of Arlington Heights. It means whoever is listening right now that remembers, hey, Matt said if it crashed in Arlington Heights, he'd buy me a taco. Then on the honor system, you're going to come by and I'll buy you a taco.
One taco per person.
Yes.
No cuts.
Exactly. So here's what's going to, if it does somehow land in Arlington Heights,
you in trouble?
Yes. Suddenly a million people were listening to the show that night. How interesting.
Hello, dear.
Well, what we'll have to do is,
we're not going to Disneyland or Mexico this year.
Well, people are dying in Mexico anyways. It probably worked out well. No, what we'll do is, if it crashes in Arlington Heights, we will get a food truck, a taco truck.
Oh, yeah, one of the ones in the city, yeah.
Yeah, we'll do it from 2 to 5 a.m.
Well,
no, we don't have to do a live remote. We'll do it right here. We get taco truck right there. There's no traffic.
Right in front of the Tribune.
Taco truck at the Tribune Tower. All of our listeners who want to swing by can go and get a free taco.
I'm in.
I'll do that. I'll rent a three-hour taco
Look
truck.
At you.
I will lose every dollar I ever made working here, but it'll be worth it.
I would be happy to help out financially.
You buy a couple of those tacos?
But no. But unfortunately, Uncle Sam.
I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a taco today.
Uncle Sam reached into my wallet on Wednesday, and
it's funny how Uncle Sam will do that. Chris Gebhardt is our dear old friend from NASASpaceflight.com. He's been on with us a couple of times, jumps back on the phone with us this morning. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm doing good and better than your wallet might be doing in a week's time.
What is the odds? I know that, that it could land over the Midwest, and even if they say, yes, it's heavily landing over the Midwest, the chances of a piece of it actually landing in Arlington Heights, Illinois, I mean, I have to have a better chance of winning the Powerball, right? I would think.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm gonna go ahead and roll the dice.
I think your wallet's safe. Yeah.
I would think so too.
Yeah, just like Taco Bell never had to pay up because Mira didn't hit that big floating, target that they had in the middle of the ocean for it. Yeah. I think you're safe, Matt.
All right. Good. Well, and if not, boy, the publicity will just be grand, won't it? So let's
hey, and then I can say that I heard the offer go out.
You did. We'll fly you to town, Chris, to come have tacos with us and talk about it. And we'll get the family that found it in their backyard. So if a piece of this, so let's go back over the specifics again.
The rules.
Yeah. Well, no, not the rules. Well, if a piece of it lands in Arlington Heights, everybody gets free tacos, whatever. But what is this thing? It's like it's the China's first space station. This was kind of a prototype that they didn't even run for very long before they shut it down, right?
Yeah, compared to other stations. You're exactly right. It was a prototype. It's called Tiangong 1. Its successor, Tiangong 2, is currently in orbit right now and in a very stable orbit. And it's all part of China's express goal of building a much larger space station, still something smaller than NASA and Russia's International Space Station, but something bigger and more permanent for them since they're not part of the International Space Station program. So this station was just a precursor, a way to help China learn how to dock with a space station, how to live for periods of time on it. And it served its purpose, and now it's coming back down to Earth, but it's used all of its useful propellant. So what makes it more interesting than some of the other satellites and objects that we deorbit very carefully every single year is we can't do that with this space station. So it's totally reliant on gravity and atmospheric drag to pull it back down into the atmosphere, and that's kind of hard to predict. Because you don't have a specific target point that you're aiming for, so you're just kind of at the mercy of what's the atmosphere like on particular days, how much is the spacecraft tumbling, and that makes it incredibly difficult. Yeah.
Okay, so, and it's, I can't remember correctly, I don't think it's in the story I have. Is it 9 tons?
Roughly, it's, hang on, I can find that really, really quick. It's very, very small. It's not a it's not at all a massive space station.
Right.
It's pretty much just the size of like a single module of the International Space Station. It's actually under 19,000 pounds.
Okay.
Total weight.
Under 19,000 pounds. So yeah. So around 9 tons, right? That's right, 2,000, blah, blah, blah. Right?
I'm a writer. I don't do math. So maybe.
I believe 2,000 pounds is a ton, so times 9 is 18. So around 9 tons. So it's not...
Okay, yeah.
So, and while that sounds like, well, 19,000 tons is a lot, in terms of things re-entering space, that's not that much, right? I think when we first talked about this a few months ago, it's like the ninth biggest thing to fall back to Earth. It's way behind Skylab and Mir and other things like that, right?
Oh yeah, and portions of those stations survived, which is why we have reason to believe that maybe some small pieces of this space station will survive. But even the pieces of Skylab and Mir that survived were quite small in relation to the whole station by the time they made it to the ground. Earth's atmosphere and objects traveling very fast. Earth's atmosphere has a very good history rate of destroying most of it before it makes it to the ground.
And the concern with this is, I want to say we talked about this before, wasn't it like parts of the engines, or there's some parts that are thought could survive reentry?
Yeah, so the parts that were mainly, and concerned is the wrong word, but the parts that have the potential to survive reentry are the heavier elements in the engine section of the of the station, so the engines being the most obvious one, and there's historical precedent for engines surviving reentry in some form. So that's why we think there might be a chance that something in the engine compartment survives. But you know, the engines would only be, you know, at that point, we're only talking a couple hundred pounds versus the 19,000 pound total. So
sure,
it gives you a pretty good picture of how much of this we're expecting to completely burn up and not pose a threat to land.
But
engines are the big thing that we're worried about. Yeah.
If a couple hundred pounds of engine survived reentry mm-hmm. and came down as one piece, that would be really bad if it landed in Arlington Heights, for example, which is a very populated area. I mean, that could still do a lot of damage, right?
It could, yes. A couple hundred pounds. The space station right now is going roughly 17,500 miles per hour orbital speed. And Earth's atmosphere will slow any piece that survives reentry down to a couple hundred miles per hour at most. It's not so much the speed that it will make it to the ground with, but the size. You're exactly right. Now, if anything does make it to the ground, there is the potential for damage to property, hopefully not any injuries. I think it's very worth while to mention that in the, 60 plus year history of space exploration and us launching things into orbit, there have been absolutely no confirmed cases of anyone being hit by space debris that's come back into the atmosphere.
So what you're saying, Chris,
includes the very,
you know what you're saying right now, you're saying we're due.
I wouldn't say that.
but it scares me that saying in 60 years, nobody's ever been hit by a piece of space debris. But there's tomorrow. And let's face it, in 60 years, how much stuff has come down?
That's why we're talking about it.
Yeah, and there's so much more stuff up there now, right? I mean, we're putting stuff up there every day. Yeah. And I know most of it is small and is going to completely burn up on reentry. But now I'm a little more surprised we're not talking more about this. The more you and I talk, I'm a little more surprised we're not hearing a little more about this, because Space Lab was talked about a lot back in the 80s or Skylab, I'm sorry. And Mir was talked about quite a bit, and we're just kind of, this is really under the radar. And maybe that's the Stormy Daniels world we live in now, where this isn't big news, but I'm wondering why we're not a little more like, hey, this could hit the Midwest and a 200 pound piece of engine might crash to the ground at 200 miles an hour. That's going to be a really bad day for somebody if it's in their yard.
Yeah. Well, so the reason this is a big, the reason this is a fairly big news story is specifically because it's not controllable. So you mentioned Skylab and you mentioned Mir, both of which were very large space stations by the U.S. and Russia that reentered. So Skylab's reentry was uncontrolled, just like this Chinese space station was uncontrolled. And portions of Skylab actually made it to the ground in Western Australia. But with Mir, we did a very controlled reentry of it. So the only major reason that Mir made headlines was because of the Taco Bell ad and because it was a pretty potent signifier of what was coming with international cooperation between NASA and Russia and the International Space Station. You know, we have thousands of objects up there, thousands of satellites up there, and we don't really talk about their deorbits. And I mentioned we deorbit, many, many satellites every single year. But we do it in a very controlled manner where we bring them in very specifically over the ocean, away from known shipping routes, so that they pose absolutely no threat in case anything survives. And, the thing with this Chinese space station is just not having any good estimate for exactly where overland it's going to come in yet. We do have a 4-day window, which has narrowed significantly since the last time we talked. Last time I think it was a 9-day window in early April, and now it looks like it will be Easter weekend, either from Friday, March 30th through Monday, April 2nd, with April 1st kind of looking like the most likely day that this will come in. So Easter weekend could be interesting for a lot of people.
Yeah, especially all of us Christians, because there's going to be a lot of scuttlebutt if there's a fireball going through the sky on Easter morning.
you know, maybe sometimes space exploration likes to keep things interesting.
Yeah, no kidding. Why is China not part of that international federation? And why are the U.S. and Russia able to get along so well in that one area and China wasn't part of it? Were they not invited? Did they not want to at the time?
So it was more a question of, in the wonderful world of diplomacy and international relations, China did not have a manned space program or a human space program at the time that the International Space Station contracts were being written and negotiated between the 16 member nations that are a part of it. Since then, China has expressed interest in joining the space station program, but they have thus far not been allowed to. So that's why they're pursuing their own space station program with the Tiangong 1 and follow-on space stations.
If this lands, say, in Arlington Heights, I have friends in Arlington Heights, say it lands in their backyard.
Yes.
150 pounds of space engine goes, what, 6-7 feet deep, I would guess, in their backyard grass? If it lands at 200 miles an hour, I would assume it's going to, you know, not just land and roll. So then they've got this thing in their backyard. Do they get to go, dude, sweet, get that thing up on eBay? Or what happens?
This is an excellent question. So if pieces of it do make it to the ground, you very first and foremost don't want to go near it. I mentioned earlier that it has used all of its usable propellant, but there are still other types of residual propellants that could be on board that if pieces of the engine section survive reentry, those propellants would be toxic to us. So you don't want to touch it. You first want to call local authorities and let them know what's happened, what you suspect has happened, based on where we will be able to predict somewhat that it'll come in at. And then you sadly don't get to keep it. Per the agreements that the spacefaring nations have with one another, if a portion of their spacecraft lands in another country, we have to give it back to them. So sadly, you can't keep it or put it up on eBay.
Now, let me ask you a couple questions here. A, is China part of that agreement?
Because yes, they are.
And boy, that's interesting, because how do you think that would play out in court? Because I'll tell you what, if it lands in my backyard, I'm totally suing to get to keep it. I'm going to file injunctions and I'm going to say, well, Mr. Trump, I'm sorry, but if we're going to tariff their steel, let's not just give back the spaceship that they just put in my backyard.
Right. So we have an example actually from one of the stations that we've been talking about earlier that we can look at about what happens if someone sues. So when Skylab came in over portions of Western Australia, there was a township in that part of Australia that didn't sue, but they fined NASA for littering based on the fact that Skylab came down over their town. And NASA came and collected the pieces of Skylab that made it to the ground, said thank you, and left. And the U.S. government never paid that fine. So my answer to this that I've been telling people on Twitter is you are certainly free to try, but I wouldn't expect the lawsuit to go anywhere. If it just lands in your backyard, I wouldn't expect the lawsuit to go anywhere.
We should have paid that fine, though, don't you think? I think if our stuff lands in some other country, there ought to be something. I mean, so if it lands in my backyard, tears up a big hole in the sod, I have to call Allstate and say, you'll never guess what happened?
Pretty much. But here's where you could come in handy with that, because the fine in Australia for Skylab was actually paid years later. So Skylab came in 1980.
Okay.
And a radio station and a radio host in 2009 actually raised money from his listeners to pay the fine on behalf of NASA. So maybe there's a chance where you could get some people to pay whatever fine if it lands in what was the name of the town?
Arlington Heights, Illinois.
Arlington Heights. Yeah.
So, but why would I pay the fine? China should pay the fine. If I'll pay the fine if we land some of our stuff in Australia again, fine. I'll raise money for that. I'm not paying off China's fine. They got to pay for it. Yeah, I'm already buying a taco truck. How? What? I can't pay for everything.
Well, you know,
you'll have to do an interview with a Chinese radio station and talk them into raising the money.
There you go. There you go. There's an idea.
All right. So space age. So we think between March 30th and April 6th, but possibly Easter weekend. That's what you're kind of thinking.
March 30th and April 2nd.
So that's
Friday to Monday. Yeah.
March 30th.
Yeah. With April 1st right now. So the way we arrive at that window, that's actually a good point, is we have all the models that run based on how we know the station is tumbling, the rate at which it's falling per day. It's dropping in orbital altitude by about 1.5 miles per day. So based on that, based on how we know right now that it's interacting with the atmosphere, all of the models seem to indicate that April 1st is a good target. And then there's a day or two of uncertainty in there based on specific interactions with the atmosphere and how the spacecraft is tumbling. So that's how we arrive at March 30th through April 2nd, with April 1st right now looking like the most likely day that it will come in. And April 1st, not only April Fool's Day, but Easter Sunday.
Yeah. And so at this point, because it's such a wide range, we have no idea whether it'd be daytime or nighttime. Right.
No, we don't. Now, this window will continue to narrow. So while we don't know daytime or nighttime just yet, what we can expect is the most likely scenario we will find ourselves in on Sunday, April 1st, if that date does hold for its reentry, is we will likely get a three-orbit target. Of these are the most likely orbits at which time it will come in. Now, that doesn't mean it'll hit those three windows. We had those with Skylab, and Skylab came in outside of that three-orbit target. But that should give us a much better indication of what land areas need to be in some way aware that this station could come in over top of them. And that's about the best we're going to be able to do. We probably won't. Unless we're extremely lucky in those three orbits, we probably won't get a good sense whether it'll be day or night until it actually happens.
How close will the watch be, though, at the end? Like you said, we'll narrow it down to like three different orbit passes that it could enter. Mm-hmm. And then, will we know when it's entering? Will scientists be trained on it and seeing it and saying, okay, looks like this is the one, it's low enough now, this is going to be the one? Like, would there be, say it was going to come in right over very populated areas of the U.S., and there was concern that, hey, you should at least be aware, will they have a good enough eye on it that there'll be kind of some warning sent out?
Well, we can hope for that. The reason I say we'll most likely get like a three orbit window will be based on the computer calculations. Now we are tracking it there. You know, we are continuously tracking it. We know where it is every single second. So what it'll really come down to is our tracking station's ability to recognize that reentry has actually begun, versus just losing it on the tracking stations and realizing, okay, it reentered and burned up, and that's why we lost it. So I wouldn't necessarily expect that we will have this is the orbit, these are the areas, you know, specifically. I say probably the most we'll get is the three orbit warning, and it will be up to us to know the timing of those orbits. Like, the good thing about those orbits is we know where the station will be in every second of those orbits. So if, say, one of those three orbits does come over Illinois or other portions of the United States or any landmass, really, we will know the time at which to say, hey, if you're in this area, just be aware that at this time there is the potential for debris from the station to make it to the ground.
And whether it happens day or night, if it does happen over the Midwest, are we likely for a couple of seconds, even if it all burns up, to see a kind of a fireball go across the sky when it passes by?
If it's nighttime, you definitely will. If it's daytime and it's clear and you know exactly where to look, it's possible you could see it, but it's much more difficult to see a reentry during daytime. Yeah.
Huh. Can we just call up Bruce Willis and have him go up?
No, I wanted to make it to Arlington Heights. I really want to buy tacos.
Yeah.
I'm serious. I think it would be pretty cool. As long as nobody gets hurt. That's my one concern. There's a huge racetrack, like the biggest. There's a very famous horse racetrack in Arlington Heights, actually.
Yeah.
Arlington Racetrack, where they run the Arlington Million every year. Nice, big, wide open area. Could just crash land right there.
That'd be perfect, right in the middle of the paddock. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, on the grass. Yeah.
If there's time for one more quick thing,
please,
because I know there are people who are definitely, concerned, and we all should be watching where this thing comes over. And we've talked about the potential of portions of it making to the ground. Mm-hmm. I just want to stress how unlikely it is for someone to actually be injured in an event like this. It's certainly possible, but to give a good indication of why we're not panicking about this. So 15 years ago, when the Shuttle Columbia tragically broke up over Texas, that was a 250,000-pound vehicle, so much more, much heavier than this Chinese space station. And 33% of Columbia made it to the ground, so roughly the same size as the space station, and no one on the ground was injured, and there was very minimal property damage. And this occurred over, the third or fourth most populous state in the United States. So, there's always the potential, but
I don't want to be the devil on the shoulder, Chris, but yes, the third or fourth most populous state in the U.S., which is pretty much congregated in three major metropolitan areas, and then it's a huge open area, right? I mean, Texas is wide open land, and that's where it came down, right?
Well, but it did come down over populated areas. It didn't come down over Dallas or Austin, but Columbia did come down over some populated areas and cities across Texas and Louisiana. So, and huge portions of Columbia's engine survived too, like we were talking about with the space station. So, it is going to be a factor of where it comes in, but also a general reminder, Earth is 70% water. So there's also a good portion that this will come in over water, but we talk about it just in case it comes in over land, so people are at least aware as much as possible of what could happen.
You just make me more and more nervous every time you say, it's really unlikely anybody gets hit by this. That's never happened. It's, most likely not going to happen. I could see they'll be playing that tape back when the person's like, I don't know what happened, but I was just standing outside because the guy on the radio said, don't worry, it's not going to hit anybody. And then, bonk, took me right on the head.
Well, that's why we say the odds of being hit, but we still talk about it.
Well, Chris, I don't know what you're planning on doing next Friday night, but if the if it hasn't landed yet, we'd love to get you back on the phone for a few minutes and talk about it. Because by this time next week, if it has not come in, we'll have it down to the three trajectories and three possibilities and really have a really good idea of what's likely to happen, right?
We will, yes. Because it'll be March 31st, so we'll be in the window. Yeah, if it hasn't come down by this point next week, we'll have a very good idea of when.
All right, well, either way, whether it has or hasn't, let's get you back on the phone to talk about what happened or what's about to happen and see if I'm going to be on the hook for some tacos, okay?
Okay, let's see. And I'm going to hold you to that, getting me up there if you do end up having to buy tacos.
Where do you live, Chris? We don't even know. Are you in California somewhere?
I'm in Florida.
You're in Florida. Okay. Well, you're near Orlando, near Tampa. Where are you near?
Near the Space Center. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll set up the flight. When the taco truck is here, we'll have you up here for it, okay?
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Chris Gebhardt from NASASpaceflight.com. We'll check in with him next week to see where Tiangong-1 is coming down. Good morning, everybody. Matt Bobala here with you, 720 WGN. Another 19 minutes or so. We'll have Orion, I believe, live from WGN West with the morning show. Engineer Bob Ferguson's in studio right now setting up the mics. Mike Steven must have some musicians coming in for Outside the Loop this morning at 6 a.m. We've got a few more minutes left. By the way, this weekend, Chicago's Best. It's a smoke show. Get ready for tasty, slow-cooked smoked meats. It's an all-new Chicago's Best Smoked. That's Sunday night at 10 on WGN TV. 312-981-7200 is the call-in and the text-in line. Thank you. We had a few different texts on Mexico and travel to Mexico. People worried about it. 847, Jeff writes, I'm 41 years old. I've been listening to GN for 41 years. It's always on in my house now via in the kitchen, bedroom, etc., and was always on in the house when I was growing up, too. Thank you, Jeff. 312 writes, headline tomorrow, space debris lands on racetrack per WGN's Matt Bubala.
Tacos for everyone.
Tacos for everyone who is listening. It will be on the honor system.
But, you know,
if 18,000 people show up, I'm going to be asking some questions. Maybe there'll be a quiz about this episode.
So Jerry is going to say he was listening. And then Jerry, let's say Jerry did listen. All right.
Then Jerry deserves a taco.
Right. But then Jerry tells his whole neighborhood, mm-hmm. and they all make, you know, they all compare notes. He tells them exactly what time, what day you said that.
Okay.
And he brings another 150 people.
Then they're all going to have to answer a question about that evening's show while they're in line for their taco. We're going to
Then he's going to play the podcast for them.
Well, if they go through that much work, then I'm buying them a taco. You can game the system. You just have to work a little at it. That's all I'm saying. So that's fine. You want to do that?
Okay.
I'll get you a
taco.
You go
to that far.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, for all this to happen in the first place, A, piece of that space station has to land in Arlington Heights.
Right.
Just picked out randomly on the map earlier. Arlington Heights is mm-hmm. our destination. That's our free taco for everyone target.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to everyone living in Arlington Heights. It was nothing personal.
Right.
Just randomly yeah. picked you. And we hope it lands in like a Dunkin' Donuts parking lot, not on your Ooh. Car, not on your dog.
Yeah.
Oh, is that why Jess, start turning your mic on.
What did she say?
She said her ex lives in Arlington Heights.
Exactly where?
I swear she had her eyes closed, but something maybe directed her.
It's kind of like a Ouija board, you know?
If I would have zoomed in the map more, she might have picked his exact house. Well, isn't that interesting? Divine intervention there. Well, hopefully outside of Jess's ex, it doesn't hit anybody else in Arlington Heights. And
what
so
if it hits like just across the border in like Buffalo Grove?
Doesn't count.
No, but
Buffalo
what if
Grove is at Arlington
up,
Heights
it, and moves it over to Arlington
That's
Heights across
cheating,
the border.
And I will not support that. A, he said, don't touch it if it lands because it's going to be full of toxic chemicals and it'll hurt you. B, you don't even get to keep it, which I think is BS. If that thing lands in my yard,
bam.
I am calling all the lawyers, mm-hmm. all of them. You got yep. Stormy's lawyers. I got Paula's lawyers. I got everybody's lawyers.
Yeah.
We're calling them all. There's no way China gets Trump. There's no way Trump would make me give up a piece of China's. Trump would love that.
Oh, yeah.
No, China.
Trade
you can't
it back.
Have it back.
Yeah.
Let's work out the trade deficit if you want your space station.
There you
back.
Go.
Boom. He's not honoring that. There's no way. He pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord. There's no way he's just giving back space junk. Uh-uh.
And then you'd have to sign a non-disclosure agreement just to make sure you don't talk about it.
But I can't tell anybody
no,
that
No, you can't tell anyone you found
space
it.
Space junk?
Oh, well, we didn't have a chunk of space lab fall in Arlington
I don't know
Heights.
What you're talking yeah. about. That wasn't my yard with the big hole in it. Yeah, I would totally keep it.
There you go.
That would have to be
that
worth
really
money.
That would really be cool.
I would sue.
Yeah.
Yeah, just said I could sell it and pay for the taco truck. But if it lands in my yard, I don't owe anybody tacos because I don't live in Arlington Heights. I'd be safe. That would be a win-win for me. I get space station, and I don't even have to buy anybody tacos.
There you go.
312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. Ten minutes left. Orion will be live from WGN West in a few minutes. Matt Bubala here with you for a couple more here on 720 WGN. If you haven't gotten a chance, like our Facebook page, The Matt Bubala Show. Put up a photo of my puppy Bailey on Friday because it was National Puppy Day. Encourage you to check us out there as well as on Twitter at Matt Bubala. We barely talked about Trump tonight. I mean, literally barely. With all the things going on, mm-hmm. we joked about I think just now for a second that Donald Trump would not make me give the space station back. I didn't bash him in any way. And yet I get this.
Oh, no.
Can you idiots not think of anything else to talk about except Trump? What a bunch of blank. He won. Get over it, losers. I'm done with your station. Every time I turn it on this time Saturday morning, this loser is bashing Trump. What a bunch of crybabies. Oh, Lord.
That's a text.
Give me a break. Yes. 630 writes, damn it, Matt, you're making me hungry. Could you imagine what my wife would think if I woke her up making tacos before 5 a.m.? She'd think I'm... Hold on. She'd think I'm completely nuts. I tried blaming it on you and Roger. She'd still think I'm nuts. Mm-hmm. Even in Aurora, none of the Mexican restaurants are open yet because they aren't nuts. I'm screwed and hungry. Jerry in Aurora. Thank you, Jerry.
Well, if Matt had bought his pizza like he should have, you wouldn't be hungry. You could have some.
Jerry'd be thinking about pizza then.
That's true.
He'd still be hungry about that. 608, good point. Do we have to buy Matt a taco if it doesn't land in Arlington Heights? Yes, that is good. If it lands in Arlington Heights, I have to buy everyone a taco.
Right.
If it doesn't land in Arlington Heights, you all owe me a taco.
Wait, you all, pertaining to what,
everybody
millions?
Listening to my voice, okay, in the last 3 hours, including right. You and Jess, owe me a taco.
Oh, whoa.
If it lands in Arlington Heights, you're going to get to go to the taco truck.
Yeah, I don't need tacos.
Oh, you stop. You would eat a taco. Don't eat tacos.
All right, no tomatoes.
That's fine.
All right.
412 says, mild. The new WGN studios will have a taco bar in the lobby. No showcase studio. Okay. Jerry in Kansas writes, but I was listening. Jerry, that's fine. I believe you. And if you drive up from Kansas when the taco truck is here, you may have a taco.
He's in Kansas.
219 asks a very good question. Matt, are you going to purchase an insurance policy like those places that give away all the stuff when it snows?
Oh, yeah. You know, like a free bed.
Yeah, like the guy that was giving away the really expensive mattresses. If the Astros won, right, the World Series, you had to buy the insurance policy. Do I need to buy a taco truck insurance policy? Do I just roll the dice? I think I just roll the dice on this one.
Okay. Well, what was the one where...
And then there's always a free bedroom set if it snows more than 2 inches on Super Bowl Sunday, right?
Something like that, yeah. But what, there was just one big one. I forgot what the food place was. But if a 16 seed... ever beats
a... Oh, my gosh, really?
Who was that?
I don't know. I didn't hear this story.
It's a national chain.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Someone will tell
us. I'm kind of looking.
The other question this listener had was, you said Arlington Heights.
Right.
Did you say Arlington Heights, Illinois, or did you just say Arlington Heights randomly? I said Arlington Heights, Illinois.
Okay.
Arlington Heights, Illinois. I don't know if there are other Arlington Heights. I don't care if there are. They are not the winners. It has to land piece of space junk from this space station. It would have to land in Arlington Heights, Illinois.
Little Caesars.
For me to buy tacos for everybody who was listening.
Little Caesars.
So what do they have to do?
Lunch for America is on the... Let's see here.
When do we get to cash in on
that? Hold on. They're going to stick to its promise. They're going to be providing a free $5 lunchbox Monday, April 2nd, between 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. local time. There are some details. The deal ends promptly at 1 p.m.
That'll be right after the space station crashes, just
there
a day
you go.
Or so later.
Just don't be in the wrong...
So wait, from noon to 1, a week from this Monday...
11:30 a.m. to 1,
11:30 a.m. to 1, local time.
If
we
you're
go to
in
our
line,
Little Caesars...
Though, at 1 o'clock the and line. Haven't ordered... You're out of luck. And there's
really?
Only one free lunchbox per order.
And what's in the lunchbox?
It looks like you get a four-slice deep dish pizza with pepperoni and one 20-ounce Pepsi-Cola product.
How many inches?
A four-slice.
So it's a personal deep, pan pizza type thing.
Yeah, kind of. But it's
that's still pretty
thick.
Good.
Yeah.
So the question is, how long is the line? Is it worth your time to wait that long in line for what's... essentially a $7, $6 lunch.
Yeah. I don't know what it cost. I haven't bought there in a while.
312 texts, tacos for Matt. It's in the omnibus bill. President Trump said nobody read this thing and whipped it together.
Right.
There could be tacos in there for me
could
for
be.
All we know.
Yeah.
Maybe they covered it already. 815 says, it's Subway, and it's coming up, I think, on the 28th, you get a free sub. So somebody else thinks there's a Subway free
there's something
thing for the
for Subway.
Maybe could that's be. Going on too. I don't
I
know. We'll cover
pizza,
it all.
The,
whatever you need.
Whatever it was.
Free tacos. If you weren't listening earlier and are listening now, you are still covered. If part of the Chinese space station that is due to crash, possibly in the Midwest, between March 30th and April 2nd, and our guy said, good chance it's Easter Sunday, if a piece of space debris from this 9-ton space station survives, hits Earth, lands within the boundaries of Arlington Heights, Illinois, I will have a taco truck here the following weekend from 2 to 5 a.m. for our show. Everybody that was listening gets to come down and have one free taco.
Now you got to find the taco truck.
We will find a taco truck.
Right.
I guarantee you. If that thing hits, we're finding a taco truck. And it'll be 3 hours of free tacos on me.
And Jess and I can help serve.
Well, you still have to do the news. I'm not paying for a newsman.
I'll give me a microphone out there and I'll do the news.
Okay, that's fine. Jess and Roger will be serving tacos while I do the show, and you can come in and say hi. Where were you when it crashed? Where were you when you're listening? If the lines get too long, we will quiz people, make sure they were actually listening.
Mm-hmm.
And if they studied up, that's fine too. And we'll podcast this so anybody can cheat and listen. Not a problem. That's the deal.
How much is
hashtag
your mortgage?
Free tacos.
What?
Oh, how bad do you think a taco truck costs for 3 hours?
You're going to be in trouble.
Do you think it's really bad?
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's only like a couple
city
thousand
license?
No, 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 no.
A city
no, no,
license
no, no. Roger,
to
Roger.
Serve on the street? At that hour? I'm sorry.
If it becomes too expensive, I'm out there making tacos myself.